So welcome everyone to Parshas Bahar. I have something to share with you, a very nice little treat. I had mentioned to you, I think, that I was talking to Ellie Grazer, or actually Michael Grazer. Ellie, his son, is studying at a yeshiva in Israel now, together with Rabbi Feldman's son-in-law, Misha Nakavaz, who married Nechama Rachel. And they're in a yeshiva who's headed by Rabbi Tzvi Kaplan. That's the name of the rabbi who heads the yeshiva. Now, Ellie said, I was either talking to him or to his father, and mentioned that we've been learning from the Sefer Das Torah by Rabbi Yerucham Lubavitz. And he mentioned that Rabbi Kaplan's father was a disciple of Rabbi Lubavitz, and he gives weekly talks in the yeshiva for the boys on the things that Rabbi Lubavitz wrote in the Sefer. And he's a wonderful man, he's easy to talk to, and I got the phone number. And some time ago I tried, and I didn't get through, and it was the wrong number or something. Anyways, I tried again, and I spoke with him this morning. And he's actually the grandson of Rabbi Lubavitz, and he's named after Rabbi Lubavitz. So his name is Rabbi Yerucham Kaplan. And he was wondering, I just told him that I live in Atlanta, I'm in the Kollel here, and we have a weekly Parsha class for a long time, and this year we're learning from the Sefer. And I just wanted, he says, well, what can I do for you? I said, well, I was just wondering if you had any insights or you could tell me a little bit about your grandfather and his approach. And we ended up that I mentioned the week Bahar, and I mentioned one line about something that it said in the Sefer, and he said, that's exactly what I talked about. And he went on for about 5 or 10 minutes and just sharing with me. And it was the same idea that I was going to mention, but it's just very nice. And I asked him if I could call him back in the future if I ever wanted to discuss anything, and he said absolutely. So we've now made a connection closer to the source of our teacher. So on Parshas Bahar, I wrote a title on my notes, and I'll use that as an introduction, that the mitzvos of the Torah, many of them, are really etzos. Etzos are like pieces of advice or tools in order to succeed in our path of life. And I thought of actually just to introduce this topic, a little anecdote which I heard, which may give the perspective of this idea. I once heard a story of a man who was born into a very poor family, and he lived his life and he remained poor. He never really got any position of importance. He never had any underlings. And he was felt self-pity. And I don't remember exactly how the story goes. He was once pouring out his heart to God, and he asked why his fortune was this way. And he was given a dream, and in the dream it was communicated to him that this was not his first lifetime, that he was actually involved in a Gilgul Neshama, in a recycling of souls. And they showed him glimpses from his previous life. Yeah, this is a Jewish concept, you know, the concept of the reincarnation of souls. And perhaps nowadays it's even more common because we're at the end of time, you know, and many of the souls have already come out, so we're just recycling. But he saw footage from his previous life, and in that life he was a powerful man. He was very wealthy, and he owned much real estate and many employees, and he was a hot-tempered fellow. And he used to, routinely yell at people and rank them out. And one time he reached really the low point, and he actually socked an employee. He gave him, he physically assaulted him, and he was struck by this. And he then at the end of his life, he was brought up to the heavenly tribunal. And they said that you really did many evil things, and that you had a terrible, uh, terrible trade, and we're not going to be able to reward you in the way that you'd be happy with. And he pleaded and he pleaded. He says, please, let me have another chance. And they said, well, all right, we can send you back down for a Gilgul. So he pleaded and he says, but what's going to happen the next life? I might do the same thing again. So they said, well, that's going to be your test. He says, listen, please let me be a different person. Let me not be wealthy, and let me not be so successful. Let me not be a manager and a lord over others. And they said, well, then what kind of a test would that be? So he said, but please, I'm afraid I'm going to fail. And he pleaded and he pleaded, and finally they agreed to his request, and they sent him back down as a lowly peasant, no influence over others at all. But, of course, when he woke up, he realized it was a dream. And of course, the point of the story is that we don't remember, we don't have any cognitive awareness of our previous lives. And therefore, here we are complaining, why did you, Hashem, why did you make me so poor? And the answer is, you asked for it. We're doing you a favor. This is what you ordered. But we don't realize that. So, what does this have to do with Rabbi Yerucham's lesson? Nothing. I just like the story. But it let's just keep that in mind. Maybe it will give us a little bit of a perspective. So, back to Rabbi Yerucham. He starts off by quoting words of one of the Rishonim, one of the early commentators, like the time of Rashi and Ramban and so forth, that era. It's the Rava, Rabbeinu Avraham ben David, who was famous for writing commentaries on the Gemara, and also famous gloss over the entire book of the Rambam of Mishneh Torah, Maimonides' great work on the entire, all the mitzvahs, all the laws. And the Ravid made certain comments where he disagreed and so forth. He's very well known for that. Anyways, the Ravid has a sefer, and in the sefer he writes an introduction, a preface. And in the preface he says the following idea. He says that many of the mitzvahs of the Torah, in fact most of the mitzvahs of the Torah, have one objective. The objective is, in order to teach man that he does have a creator who rules over him. That is the purpose of most of the mitzvahs of the Torah, to teach man that he has a creator who rules over him. Why is that such an important objective for the mitzvahs? So he goes on to explain, because really life is filled with great danger. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Holy One, created man and placed him in the world. And in the world, he gave him free rein, basically. As the verse says, V'ha'aretz nasan livnei Adam. God gave the land to man. And another phrase, he quotes, Kol shasa tachas raglav. He placed everything under the feet of man. In other words, he placed everything in our control. Here's the world. You can roam around it. You can do anything you like. Free rein. Well, we know that's part of the test. The purpose is for man to recognize the Creator, recognize Hashem. And there's a great danger, because everything looks like we're the bosses. We're in control. We're the king. How can a person go through life given all these privileges, given all these possessions, and somehow accomplish the task of recognizing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given it to us, and he's really our boss? I mean, he's given us money, he's given us homes, he's given us family, spouses, fields, sometimes lord relationships with others. How is it possible for a person to, with given all those favors and all those benefits, to actually come to the realization that he's just a recipient of God's gift, and that really God is in control of him, and he could really take things away at any time, and it's not really his, it's really on loan, and it's everything's being monitored, and how he uses it. So, it's a hard task. Because there is this illusion, which is not quite reality. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm going to make it easy for you. I'm going to give you all kinds of reminders. And not just reminders, not just signs. I'm going to give you modes of behavior which will instill within you the realization that God is your Moshe, He's your ruler. And the way Rabbi Kaplan he put it this way, he said over the same thing. He said, you know, we know it says in the Torah that it's forbidden for a Jew to say, Kochi v'otzem yadi asa li esachayel hazeth. My strength and the might of my hand brought me this wealth. It's forbidden for a Jew to say that or even to think it. That's a verse in Devarim. But a person might say, but how am I supposed to live by that? If everything that my eye sees and my ear hears tells me to the contrary. My life experience shows me that I do earn my wealth. It is through my education and through my training and through my hard work and my efforts and my decisions that I am successful. How can I escape falling into the trap of saying what I'm not allowed to say or not allowed to think? So the answer is, that's what the mitzvahs are for. The mitzvahs are to help us not to fall into that trap. They're our aids. Exactly what we're asking for. We internally, on the soul level, we're begging Hashem, like going back to my story, please Hashem, help us so that we don't fail by forgetting you. And so Hashem says, okay, I'll help you. But we don't know that we asked for it. And so we complain, why am I so poor? Why did I not have influence over others? But really, we asked for it. It's the same thing as with the mitzvahs. Most people look at the mitzvahs as obligations, duties. I've got to do this. Oh, not enough. It's not enough that I have to give charity. I also have to support the Kohen, and I have to support the Levi. And then you're going to tell me that before I eat, I have to make a bracha? Why can't I? It's my food. And before I get dressed, I have to make sure that my four corners have tzitzis on them. And not just that, but you're telling me I can't wear certain kinds of clothes. I can't buy a suit that if it has, I got to have it checked. And if it has wool and linen, I'm not allowed to put it on. And I planted a tree. And it grew delicious fruit, and I can't eat the fruit because it's in the first 3 years of its life. Oh, and I can't go to work on Shabbos. I've got a store. I've got a business. It needs tending to. I can't work. It's my business. And then the killer, the beginning of this parsha, the seventh year, the whole year is Shabbos. You're not allowed to work the land. Come on. It's my farm. It's my land. Oh, no, by the way, it's not your land. And if you bought anybody's land at the end of the 50th year, it's not yours anymore. I bought it. It's not yours, so it goes back to the seller. Free. Ribono Shalom, what are you doing to me? You see, we're looking at the mitzvahs as obligations. Now, let's wake ourselves up, or let's show ourselves the vision of our souls pleading before God. When God put us on the earth, He said, your admission in life is to go through life and to remember that I am in control. But you're not going to see that. You're going to see that you're in control. And you're going to have to remember that I'm in control. So we were pleading. We said, Hashem, don't do this to me. It's too hard of a test. How am I going to remember that you're in control? Please help me. Give me some reminders. Okay, I'll give you some reminders. This giving charity will remind you that you know, the money is given to you to use, but also to share. And giving and making brachas on the food will remind you that you have to ask permission from God because He blessed you with the bounty. And the tzitzis will remind you that even your clothing is a blessing from God. And kilayim, the forbidden mixture, will remind you that not everything is yours to use as you please. And the laws that govern marriage, relationships will remind you that your wife is not your possession, right? She is a gift from God, and you have to behave with her in a certain way, follow the guidelines, everything. And Shabbos will remind you that ultimately God is in control, and you, once a week, you're not going to be able to do anything, nothing creative. You're just going to just be an observer. And that will remind you that you really don't have your own power, and that your power is on loan, and one day will be taken away. We really asked for it, but we forgot that we asked for it. So instead of being grateful for the mitzvahs, instead of saying, thank you, Hashem, look how many reminders, look how many etzas, back to that word, mitzvahs are really etzas. They are good tools. They are things that make us more successful in accomplishing our mission. We should be thankful for all the tools. Instead, we forgot that we had that mission. We forgot that the mitzvahs was really what our souls were asking for, to make our mission more successful, and we forgot that, and now we're saying, we're complaining, why do I have to do so many different obligations? The mitzvahs are etzes for us. Rabbi Yerucham cites a little bit of a statement that was once written by also one of the earlier commentaries, the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra wrote the following. He was writing about the mitzvah of tzitzis and the custom for men to wrap themselves in a talis when they pray. So it's like a super tzitzis. We're supposed to wear the talis katan, the small tzitzis, under on us all the time, and then we're supposed to wrap ourselves in the big talis at the time of davening. So the Ibn Ezra says, I don't understand why the custom is to wear the talis when you daven. He says, if it was up to me, I would think that you should wear the talis as soon as davening is over, and you leave the shul, and you go out to work. That's when you really need the reminder of the tzitzis, to make sure that you don't sin. When you go into the marketplace, when you start dealing with people, money matters, and you'll be tempted to maybe not be less than honest. That's when you need the talis. He says, you don't need a talis when you're davening. When you're davening, you're not going to commit any sins. So Rav Yerucham says, what? That's backward thinking. We don't think that way. A much bigger honor to wear, to come into shul and to put on the talis, right, when we're davening. We think the opposite of him. He says, yeah, that's right. Because we think of the mitzvahs as obligations, and he thinks that the mitzvahs are etzas. For to him, a mitzvah is what it was given for. To help him not to sin, not to forget God. So he's like this crying soul. Okay, God, when I'm davening, I'm all right. What am I going to do when I get out to the marketplace? What's going to save me? What's going to remind me? I wish I could wear my talis then. We're not thinking that way. We've got to wear the talis. We've got to put on the tefillin. It's a duty to give tzedakah, and it's a duty to keep Shabbos, and we're not asking for the etzes, because we forgot what our mission is, and we forgot that really what we want is to be able to succeed in our mission. That's the lesson. If we live our lives for its true purpose, which is to wade through the world of where God is concealed, and to realize what we've always mentioned many times, as Rabbi Luzzatto makes it so clear, that our mission in life is to become closer to God, and he placed us in a world of test. And the test, we don't see clearly that God is there. We have to find him. We have road signs pointing in the right direction and road signs pointing in the wrong direction. And we have to try to pick the right road signs. And it's difficult. If we live our life with that realization, that goal, that mission, then we will welcome the mitzvahs. The mitzvahs will become our aids, our etzas, our good solutions on how to succeed. If we don't live that way, if we live our life as though all those illusions are our reality. The illusion of being in control, the illusion of amassing possessions. If that is what we're living for, then not only do we not need etzas, but the mitzvahs are a burden to us. They're getting in the way of our true mission. We're trying to go out and make and become masters. We're trying to go out there and become tycoons. And then I got to stop working on Shabbos. It's an interruption in my week. If we're living for the illusion, then we have no need for the mitzvahs. And if we do them, even if we do them, it'll only be out of duty. If, however, we're living for the reality, not the illusion, the ability to see through the illusory world and see that our true purpose is to remember that Hashem is our Moshel, and everything that we have is from Him on loan, and it's all for our benefit, of course, then we will see the mitzvahs as tremendous opportunities to succeed. We will look forward to them. Shabbos is a time to succeed in our business, because success in business is realizing that Hashem is in control. The way to succeed in business is to keep Shabbos. The way to succeed in farming is to rest on the sabbatical year. Then you'll be a successful farmer, but not successful in the illusory, successful in the true way of coming to connect to Hashem and to become closer to Him. And this is a perspective that Rav Yerucham gives us on Parshas Bahar, and in fact, something that will carry out throughout the entire Torah and all of the mitzvahs. May we be all successful in our mission.
Shkoyach.
What
yes.
about the premise of doing a good deed because you're told to and you don't understand or anything, but you just keep doing it, and eventually you'll be doing it for the right purpose because you'll learn eventually?
Okay, good question. First of all, this idea of mitzvahs being tools to get us to realize Hashem, the Rav had said, are as true for most of them. Some of the mitzvahs may not even seem to fit with that. And there, those mitzvahs, we may have to just do it even though we don't understand it. Furthermore, it's better to do a mitzvah even if you don't have this pure intent than not to do it at all. And that's why some of us, many people, just look at it, the mitzvahs, as duties. But what he's saying is, we don't have to settle for that. We can have a much greater appreciation and understanding of the mitzvahs if we just realize what our objective is and that the mitzvahs are helping us reach our objective. Why go through life thinking that mitzvahs are a burden if you can go through life appreciating them and loving them? You can achieve higher than that. Yeah.
Rabbi, with regards to the soul living in perpetuity, I guess, does that mean that the soul from Sinai continues on through the generations?
Which soul?
Well, if you go all the way back.
And you said all the souls were at Sinai.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, my soul is at Sinai. Okay.
Yeah.
The next generation, is that soul? In other words, does it go on to successive generations?
Oh, you're talking about what I was mentioning about the reincarnation
mm-hmm,
of souls?
Mm-hmm.
Souls never die. And many souls have, you know, been in the world more than once.
Okay, so it's not necessarily...
You could have a new soul, you could have a soul that hasn't... but they were still at Sinai. The soul was at Sinai, but the person with the body was not until later. Yeah. Listen, I don't know too much about this either.
No, not too much.
I'm just telling you, you know, what do I know?
Can
yes.
I ask you, is it easier to look at mitzvahs as aids if you grow up from birth, as compared to someone who accepts coming more observant? Because there's always a barrier. that, that you accept it later on in life after you've lived another life. You say, why do I have to do this?
It makes no sense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's such a burden.
Mm-hmm.
But is it easier? Do people who are from birth, and do they sometimes just say, it's too much for me? It's no longer an aid in my life to get closer to it.
It's an excellent question. I think that Rav Yerucham was talking to observant Jews when he said that we don't have the right attitude. You could argue that one who was brought up doing it without understanding will have a harder time accepting this. And one who accepts it as an older person, a mature person, what was the reason that this person chose to become observant?
Mm-hmm.
What would you say is the motive? I mean, everyone's different, but what would you say is the motive of a person to accept mitzvahs later in life?
So that his children will eat in his house.
Okay. That's a valid reason.
That's a very valid.
So that's a madrega. As Steve said, the sages say, a person should always do mitzvahs, even if it's for the wrong reason. A person should do mitzvahs even with a less than pure motive, even on a low level, because eventually it will become purified. So, both Jews, both the FFB, from birth, and the, or the, some people have coined the phrase FFH, from habit, or the BT, the Baal Teshuvah, they all have to try to work to come to this level. I don't know. I don't know if you can say it's easier or harder. I could see both people having an easier time. Both people having. I think it's, it depends on the person. Yeah, that's a great question, and it's fascinating. Point I think that we should realize is that real Judaism is a lifelong pursuit. No matter who you are, no matter where you're coming from, it doesn't really matter. It's always a lifelong pursuit. There's always much more to be accomplished. And we've talked about this before. It really doesn't matter where you're at on the road. When we talked about the path, the derech, it doesn't matter where you are on the road. You still have to keep traveling. You still have to keep traveling on the road. And if you don't keep on traveling, you may be getting off and going the wrong road. So it's a test for everyone, a challenge for everybody. It's not true that it's easier to be FFB than it is to be BT. There's no truth to that. Everyone has his own set of circumstances, and Hashem expects each person to do what is within their power to do given their circumstances.
Seeing where it was written, though, that it's far superior to the to come from later and on your own than it is to be brought up that way. And I don't know that I agree.
I think that's a misquote of what the statement is. The statement is that a Baal Teshuva is on a higher level than a tzaddik. What that means is a person who has sinned and has repented from the sin is now in a certain way on a higher level than the person that never did the sin.
Right, but then my problem with it is the person who's been brought up from all the way, there's a lot of things he knows because he's been taught about, and the other person might do things that he shouldn't do or not do things that he should do because of ignorance, plainly
all right.
and simply. And from birth, so to speak, has that advantage because he's been taught. He knows what to and what not to do.
Okay, so you're looking at it in terms of bottom line. You're saying, who's doing more mitzvahs? Or who's doing it the more right way? Whereas in Hashem's mind, that's not what's important. All of these terms that we use, they're totally distorted. As we talked about when we spoke about last year about free will, Hashem looks at each person and say, what was the situation that he was given? He's not responsible for that. He's responsible for what he does in his situation. The person that started observing the commandments later in life and doesn't know all of the laws, but whatever he learns, he puts into practice, and he does it with a whole heart. That person may be on a higher level than the person who knows more, but he did nothing to get that way. I remember Rabbi Dessler saying, if a person is brought up, taught the mitzvahs, and he does exactly what he was taught from his youth, he does that his whole life, and he never changes. Doesn't go down, doesn't go up. He says, that person at the end of his life will be judged. And what will they say? There's a lot of reward here to be given. We're going to give it to your parents. Not to you. What did you do on your own? So, we have to break out of that, of the numbers game. How many mitzvahs do you do? Or how many halachas do you know? We have to get, that's such a immature, such a, you know, we have to look at it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu put us, made us each different, and everyone is on this road, and our test is, our challenge is to move from where we were placed to go forward. We all have to move forward. So that the statement that you're quoting is true, that if a person, see, your average BT is not really a Baal Teshuvah. A Baal Teshuvah means someone that knew and that went away, left the path, transgressed, and then came back. That's a Baal Teshuvah. Your average contemporary BT didn't do that. Your average BT is someone that didn't know. And there, he's just starting at a later point. So it doesn't even apply, that statement, to contemporary BTs. Yes?
We look at the example of, I would say, a beautiful example of a frum from birth would be, let's say, Chava, you know, in Gan Eden.
Yeah. She was never born.
Well, but let's say where she was created.
Yeah, right. from her birth, FFC.
From creation, okay? So she comes from a rib and she's made and boom, you know, you have Chava. So she was told, like, let's assume this frum from birth child, to compare the, you know, coming from a home that you're taught Torah and this is, you know the right way, and then it's just, so you leave something, you deviate. So she's created by God, and she's told, how much more can you be told than by God, don't eat from that tree. Okay? So there's an example of, you can't assume that it's easier for from birth, why she was told by God.
Mm-hmm,
you know.
Mm-hmm. And it was only one mitzvah.
It was only one mitzvah.
She can't say, I didn't learn that one. I wasn't there that day. We're all on the same path.